I wish I caught that.
It did.
This is the third time we recorded this because my first, I kept messing up. Second, I kept messing up. And then my pages were out of order. So, let's go. Today, we're talking about my favorite person to talk about, Miss Juliet Gordon-Lowe, the founder of the Girl Scouts, my boss.
Of course, now she's gonna...
Now Ash's gonna be loud. Yeah.
Yeah. Come here, friend.
So, I work at her birthplace. Heads up. I'm not giving you the location, but it's easy to find. Please do not come look for me. Please don't. Just enjoy the beautiful home. But I'm not giving you everything that there is to know. I'm just giving you what I think needs to be told. But I'm also not just giving you my tour information or someone else's. You could walk into that museum and walk away with something you didn't know before. While some of the information is widely known, some isn't. But the best source I found and was pointed to was the remarkable founder of the Girl Scouts, Juliet Gordon-Lowe, by Stacey A. Cordery. Some of my coworkers and myself call it the Bible, and while it may be close to perfect, it isn't. I tried to get Stacey on the podcast, but she didn't answer my emails, sadly.
Okay, well, you two, we just...
The girls and the boys are fighting.
Nope, Finn, come here. Nope.
Hold on, let's get them to quiet down for a second.
Yeah,
one second.
On, guys, come on.
Come on, Ash.
Come on, guys, chill out, relax.
Don't be an instigator.
You lay down. Lay down, Finn, lay down. Good boy, you stay here. You be good. Okay. Lay down for mommy.
All right.
No.
So, Juliet's life is much more than words can ever describe. But what I found, I want people to know how amazing this woman is. She is very, this is the only cuss word I'm going to say, badass. I love her so much. And before we get into her story, we've got to talk about the people who brought her into this world. William Washington Gordon, II, Willie for short, was a third generation Georgian and married the Spitfire Nellie Kinsey. Some say they met at Yale College in 1853. Some say they met at other places, but regardless, they met in 1853 in a very funny way. Willie was walking by the stairs. Nellie was sliding down the banister, crashed into him, they fell in love right then and there. The mature, responsible Southerner fell head over heels for the irresponsible Nellie. Eleanor Lyle Kinsey, Nellie, was the only girl, the baby, in a family of 7 sons up in Illinois. She was loud, she was proud, and she got what she wanted. Her family was one of the founding families to set up the city of Chicago. She knew she was a mischief maker, and she lived up to that name pretty well. With a long life of unladylike tendencies like cussing in more than one language, which is talent.
So impressive. I know I've heard that so many times.
I know, but still
I'm
impressive.
I'm still impressed.
Yeah. She'd do it in like native languages too, like native tongue.
Oh, girl.
I want to see how that sounds.
Fancy.
You could cuss me out like that. I'd be like, it's okay. You complimented me.
I'm like, oh, wow.
Thank you. Of course, with being from 2 separate worlds during the time of the Civil War, the two did have their disagreements. Nellie's belief in anti-slavery would bicker with her husband and her family's work and his family's work at the cotton trade. It wasn't perfect, but it was still a strong love that would never fade even after death. Juliet loved their love, but she didn't enter their world until October 31st, 1860, Halloween. She was named Juliet McGill Kinsey Gordon, but that what was called a fat, hearty little stranger and would be nicknamed Daisy. Since that's what her family called her, we're gonna call her that too. But do know that at first, her grandmother said, "I'm sure that after a very little while, she will cease to look like a little freak and do credit to the stock from which she is descended." Which is the funniest sentence to say, but
so
the meanest
up.
Sentence to say. Like, imagine
so
being born into this world and you're called a little freak, and sure, over time, she'll look prettier. That is so mean.
Man, that's so messed up. It's so funny.
It is. It's a little rude, but eventually she would be described as a beautiful baby with a sweet disposition who gave little trouble. And while growing up, her family would be separated due to Willie fighting the Civil War, but Nellie and Willie always kept up each other to date with letters, and letters about Daisy.
It's just so cute.
It is. Like, nothing, not even a war can stop your love.
No.
During the years of childhood, Daisy spent some time in Savannah and some time up in Illinois. Though she knew there was a war going on, she didn't know the full context. One time, a 3-year-old Daisy sat on a Union soldier's knee. Hold on, let me start this sentence over. Sat on a Union soldier's knee. Looking at his arm, that was hurt and injured. It was missing a little bit. She asked what happened to it. He laughed and said, "Got it shot off by a rebel." Daisy knew that word. Knew her dad was one of those. She told him, "I suppose my father did it. He shot lots of Yankees." To which everyone laughed. But today, we know that is very rude to say. Both of those things. Really all of it. Up in Illinois, however, she learned all about the Native American life, as the Kinsey family was very respectful to them due to Nellie's parents being advocates for it. Daisy was quite the troublesome kid in the best way. She was quite accident-prone, but nonetheless silly. For example, in 1866, a windowsill dropped on her hand and she broke a few of her fingers and was at risk for amputation. That must have been a heavy windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
The physician fixed things up for her without amputation, only for Daisy to say, "Well, I do hope we are not going to have any more performances like this one," which is more of a mom thing to say, but still, ouch, shaking my hand. Despite what you may think, she wasn't a problem child, nor was she spoiled. She was different in her own way, or eccentric, as her siblings would say. When Daisy was 10, she was pulling taffy with her cousins when they realized it was the same color as Daisy's brown hair. Then they decided to braid the taffy in her hair, but were unable to get it out, resulting in her mother having to cut off the majority of her hair. And her mom was livid. She was a lot of things. She was mad.
I don't blame her. Oh my gosh, that's worse than gum in the hair.
Yeah, taffy.
Oh, no.
You didn't think about putting water to get it out.
Oh my god, or peanut butter or anything like that. Yeah. Wait, was peanut butter back then?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Regardless, they didn't know what to do.
They didn't know what to do. That's, oh no.
She never was on time, and according to her brother, time made nothing in Daisy's scheme of things. Two and two, but by no means made four to her. He also said she had an extraordinary intuition and very little logic. She was also She was very kind to animals. One cold night, she was worried that the cows outside might be cold. So she took her mother's very nice blankets and wrapped the blankets around the cow. Unfortunately, the loosely pinned blankets fell off the cows and became very muddy and dirty.
Oh, no.
She also thought she could save a dead dog by laying it on her mother's bed and giving it medicine so that it would come back to life. Aww. Which is cute, but ew. Growing up in the Civil War was difficult, and despite Daisy's young age, she knew there was a strife throughout the country. It's very likely that the family wealth had some play in keeping them away from some of the things in society. She would not have known the conversations involving the harsh lives of bondage versus freedom within the African-American population of Savannah. She did know, however, that they lived different lives. There was a little girl, a slave girl named Hetty, who worked under her Willie's mother, Sarah. Daisy's older sister, Nell, wrote in her journal that the three of them would often play around in the house, having fun, being kids. But throughout the day, Hetty would be called to go do her duties. We don't know how much they understood what was going on at the time, but we can only assume they thought it was odd. I mean, even today, just thinking about having your friend at 3 years old having to go work and you can get to play all day, it seems
a little weird.
I'd
be that kid that'd be like, "Let me help you." And then
he'd be like, no.
Yeah.
You can't. Why can't I? Reasons. And it would be even more confusing, which probably is exactly what happened to her.
Probably. Because she was so sad.
Yeah. It's a heartbreaking thing. And this is a little fun little side tidbit. We have the enslaved census from at the museum, and you can see Grandma Sarah's, the slave owner's name, but Hetty is listed as a 1-year-old. So even as 1 year old, she's listed as a worker. Which is
so
heartbreaking.
Sad. What is a 1-year-old supposed to do?
And what is the 3-year-old going to do?
Yeah.
Like, they're only so capable.
Yeah.
This is something important. Keep this in mind as we go through Juliet's life. She lived through this time. She got to see it. But I think it's what's remarkable is look where it is today. Look what she made out of it. And I think
that's true.
Really amazing. Yeah. Daisy was very creative. She wrote scripts, designed costumes, and played as many roles as possible. Despite her knack for playwriting, she had some trouble in school, mainly when it came to spelling. Some might conclude that she had a learning disability, such as dyslexia, but some people believe she just didn't care for proper spelling, as she didn't have as much fun with it as art and other abilities. I mean, when you care about something, you're going to put more into it, so she probably just didn't care about spelling.
Fair enough.
Her cousin Caroline remembers Daisy as a girl who had self-confidence, perseverance, and who loved being involved in a myriad of activities. She was also a little erratic. It seemed you never knew what was going to happen next, but she always had something on her mind.
Ash is losing her mind a little bit.
Yeah, they're playing tug-of-war. At 12, Daisy would go to Miss Emmett's school in Morriston, New Jersey, and just a year later go to Virginia Female Institute, VFI, in Staunton, Virginia. Her antics continued. She once told her friend that she could get rid of her freckles for her if she really wanted, yet it involved a needle and holding one down.
Oh, no.
But don't worry. She said it wouldn't hurt if the girl sang really loudly. I'm just gonna give you a tattoo. If you scream, you're just making it easier for me. Like, the pain will go away. Which I guess it will because you're focusing on screaming, but no. That was her mindset.
Girl, no.
She was very compassionate and quite impulsive. These two traits resulted in the creation of the Helpful Hands Club. Daisy and her friends wanted to help a poor immigrant family, so they decided to make clothes for the family, despite none of them knowing themselves how to sew. She taught them how, but when showing off the clothes to her family, the stitches came loose and everything fell to the floor.
Oh, no.
Her brother called it the Helpless Hands Club.
Aw, that's mean.
But kind of funny.
Yeah.
School was her real nemesis, and she would be begged to be brought home and quit school, but at the same time beg to let her continue school. After those schools, she would go to Edge Hill School in Albemarle County, Virginia. She goes to Virginia, where she learned geography, German, and French. While students at the school were told to be proper and feminine, Daisy would rather roll down hills, take strange paths, and just have fun, not caring if it was ladylike or not. One night, her and her friend snuck out of their rooms and went to the creepiest place they could find. This would end in them getting into trouble, but Daisy didn't let it stop her. Not only was she a troublesome streak, This would end in them getting into trouble, but Daisy didn't let it stop her. Not only was a troublesome streak growing, but also the love for style and fashion. She would often draw doodles of outfits and send them home to her mom, begging to have this design made. Hopefully that made sense through my fumble. She may have escaped getting into too much trouble at school, but she could not escape sickness, especially her earaches. Somewhere in her youth, she caught malaria, which of course wasn't uncommon, but it didn't help later in life. She didn't let anything hold her back, and was quite popular. She joined Theta Tau, which was a secret group that was similar to fraternities.
Huh.
Now, this is fun. Now, during this time, and this is up to a listener's interpretation, but some sources imply that Daisy had girlfriends. She called them her spooners, gave them nicknames, and wrote them little lovely poems.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. There was one girl that she wrote about to her mom explaining, "I don't know if I want to be her or be with her," which is a very honest feeling sometimes as a queer person. It sounds pretty sapphic to me, but once again, no one knows for sure. I want to hope she was a little queer, even for a brief time period. And considering that intimate relationships her parents had, it would make sense that Daisy would be romantic. No wonder she was so charismatic and swooning with the girls. Like, if your dad is this heartthrob and your mom is this crazy lady and heartthrob, you're going to be, you're going to have people flocking to you.
True.
Her two best friends were Abby Lippitt and Mary Gail Carter. The three were inseparable. If one of them was sad, they were all sad. If one of them was celebrating something, they all celebrated. I endearingly call them the Three Stooges because they also got into a lot of trouble together.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The three were more focused on having a good time rather than following rules like sneaking out I mentioned earlier. Everything okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I was making sure. Your phone went off earlier.
Oh, yeah. My mom just called and I was just like, I'll call you later.
No worries. We'll make sure it was okay.
Yeah, we're all good.
So let's continue. During her school years, Daisy was taught by prestigious people. Her art teacher was Samuel Frost Johnson. Her dancing instructor was renowned child prodigy Alan T. Dodworth. Her landscape painter, Robert W. Ware. She studied ceramic painting under Charles Volkmar, and finally her porcelain painter instruction was Edward Lysett. Some pretty well-known people. Not known to me, but to someone else. She enjoyed art, but marriage and motherhood were upcoming goals. At 18 years old, she'd have her debut. At 19, she'd be done with her schooling and have a little bit of time off to vacation with her friends, but once that was over, she was stuck at home with Nellie. These two butted heads quite a bit. Nellie wanted to be pampered and be the center of attention, and Daisy questioned authority more than Nellie liked. Nellie also didn't like to be challenged, especially by her own children, but Daisy challenged her frequently. However, in 1880, Daisy's younger sister Alice died of scarlet fever. This caused another downward spiral for Nellie, the first being Willie being gone all the time. Daisy picked up more responsibility until Nellie could get back into the swing of things. Nellie didn't make it easier, however, often lashing out at Daisy and making her feel like Daisy hadn't loved Alice enough. Maybe if she did, she'd still be here. The loss of her beloved sister was heartbreaking, but she found comfort in one person, William Mackie Lowe. I'm gonna call him Mackie just to keep things easier. Mackie Lowe was the son of the Gordon's close family friend, Andrew Lowe. Me and Lizzie know Andrew Lowe pretty well.
Yes.
But Andrew Lowe was a wealthy cotton factor in Savannah, but he was originally from England. Daisy and Mackie connected right at the start, and Daisy fell fast and hard. He was careful, kind, and giving when she needed it. She thought he was a little boyish, but graceful at the same time. He took her mind off the grief she was feeling. Just like her friends from school, Daisy and Mackie were inseparable, and Daisy fell more and more in love with him. Yet she was scared. They fell in love very quickly, and it hadn't been long since Alice had passed. Additionally, she knew her father would not approve of a marriage between them. Mackie was irresponsible and childish. He came from a lot of money and never had to work hard. The exact opposites of the kind of man Willie wanted. Andrew Lowe didn't approve either. Daisy would write letters to Willie for years, but they would never meet his rightful receiver. Can only assume why. Now, we can't blame Andrew, though. He had dealt with major grief and heartbreak, as he lost two wives, a son, and a best friend all within a few years of each other. It's an easy assumption to think maybe he didn't want his son to experience similar heartbreak. Plus, even though the Gordons were wealthy, they weren't low-level wealthy. And it might look bad if Mackie married a girl of lower wealth. There's also the idea that if he married Daisy, he would be stuck in America and away from his father. These factors did damper the relationship, but not enough for Daisy to stop writing letters to Mackie. She write letters in hopes that Mackie would return them, yet they'd never come. It's like a Romeo and Juliet situation.
Yeah, that's so sad, though.
After a while, Daisy believed she'd never get married, and it was time to let Mackie go. In Daisy's eyes, no one could ever compete with this masterpiece that was William Mackie Lowe. She suffered in silence due to this decision, believing she would be a spinstress. While she may not have been successful in the love department, she had two best friends who were her ride or dies to keep her happy, and they did. Between life, debuting, and her future wedding, her life was pretty normal. But it wouldn't stay normal and happy for too long, as another round of malaria and heart and earaches would sicken her. By 1883, she weighed 111 pounds and couldn't sit up long without feeling ill.
Oh, man.
That's a little bit more than me.
Wow.
Yeah, so she was tiny. And she's about my height, so she was tiny.
Yeah.
It was terrible for her, and to make matters worse, her eldest sister, Eleanor, was getting married and would be leaving the family home. This was upsetting for Daisy, and she watched her sister's marriage, and watching it only brought up memories of Mackie. She truly believed she'd never marry. After recovering from malaria and wanting to go abroad, she was able to reunite with Mackie. They talked about the relationship, any issues and concerns, but most importantly, they shared that they loved each other. The two agreed to wait until things were better and Mackie was done with school because a secret engagement would not go over well with each side of the family. They went their separate ways again, but they soon confirmed their engagement while in England. Daisy finally had her Mackie. Happiness doesn't come alone, however, and Daisy's earaches returned. Daisy went to see doctors in Atlanta for her ear issues and was treated with silver nitrate, which did the opposite of help her ears. Another doctor would try to help, but from what Willie says, he only caused her eardrum to be pierced. Looking back, it's difficult to figure out what exactly was going on in Daisy's ear. Author Stacy Cordery, whose book I'm getting this information from, says, "In Daisy's case, it is likely that she suffered from a painful chronic middle ear infection described by ear doctors today as hearing loss and spontaneous rupture, tear of the eardrum. The assumption had been made that the episode was the silver nitrate that made Daisy deaf in one ear."
Oh, man.
So she probably had her ear ripped from the inside. Her hearing was not completely gone, but it was very difficult for her to hear. She could not hear herself well and often spoke in a low voice. Recovery, as you can imagine, was slow. What wasn't slow was the fast approaching wedding. The lovers would get married on December 21st, 1886, and it went almost perfectly. As they were heading out to the carriage, guests were throwing good luck rice to the newlyweds, and unfortunately, a grain of rice flew into her ear and caused an infection.
Oh, no.
The bad ear, too. Yeah.
Oh,
do you not,
no.
Did you not hear this, or you never forgot about it?
I kind of forgot about it.
That's okay. The pain became so great that Daisy and Mackie had to cut their honeymoon short to see the doctor. By May 1887, Daisy would also come somewhat deaf in her good ear. Growing up hearing, she did have its advantages. She already knew how the words looked and felt in the lips, Growing up hearing did have its advantages. She already knew how the words looked and felt on the lips, and because she could speak so well, she didn't need sign language, and typically her hearing problems wouldn't be noticed. If she acted or seemed like she misheard, it would be passed off as another one of her antics. Throughout her marriage, she looked for cures and treatments, even after becoming accustomed to her loss.
Wow. That's sad.
It is. And, like, freak accidents.
Yeah.
But back to the marriage, though. Since neither of them had a job, they were free to go where they pleased. They often hung out with Mackie's close friend, the Prince of Wales.
Huh.
Yeah. Things weren't perfect, though, as Mackie often left her at home while he went out and partied. Daisy found joy with lavish parties in their mansions, writing to friends and family, and divulging in arts and crafts. One of the lavish things she got to do was seeing Queen Victoria's drawing room in Buckingham Palace. and her dress was an issue. The large spray of flowers she carried were heavy. Her solution? The lady in front of her's bustle was quite big. Like the bump on the butt, that thing? Daisy placed her bouquet on the bustled lady in front of me in a quite this is what she said. Placed her bouquet, this is her words, on the bustle of the lady in front of me, and quite unconscious of the servant she rendered, she carried it through the length of all the rooms. So that lady was carrying even heavier weight of this lady's, Daisy's thing of flowers.
Oh, that's so iconic, though.
It is. I just can't imagine that lady's just like, your dress looks so pretty with all these flowers, and she just thinks the one she's holding is like, oh, thank you. Turns around, just flowers on, no, the flowers on your back. Where? I don't see any.
It's Shredder. Where?
It's Daisy. Where?
I couldn't imagine either, too. Like, you're already wearing something that's such a heavy
garment. And just a few extra pounds.
And it's like, whew. Hey, you work out maybe, more. It turns out, no, it's just
Miss Daisy Lowe Daisy got him put just tired. On you.
Yeah.
Despite all the fun and humor of that, her hearing, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, it continued to decline.
Oh, no.
Yeah. A German physician said there was no hope for a full recovery, which is heartbreaking. But good for her that she is still having fun through all this.
I mean, as she should, though. I mean, that's just iconic.
Mm-hmm. By 1888, Daisy learned that her husband wasn't perfect.
Oh.
Yeah. His money often got in the way of their marriage, and as time would pass, he would spend more and more time away from her. It slowly ate Daisy away, despite how much she tried to hide it. Oh, sorry. Let me reread that. It slowly ate Daisy away, despite how much she tried to hide it. A common question about their marriage is that they had children. There is an exact reason. Some sources say it was because of the health issues on either side of Mackie. Let me start that over. Some say it was because of the health issues on either side, or that Mackie's frequent absence didn't allow much time for them to attempt to conceive, or maybe for another reason that we'll get to later. So there's a handful of stuff. We don't really know for certain. Her love for helping people never went away despite all this, especially despite her husband's distaste for it. He thought it was below them and forbade her from doing so. But that wasn't what Daisy would do. Let me reread that again. He thought it was below them and forbade her from doing so, but Daisy would do it anyway. At the Wellsburn house, their Scottish mansion in rural Warwickshire, over near Loch Ness, Daisy would sneak out, feed, and care for the vagrants who came across the house and anyone in the nearby village. Her act of service was not limited to Europe, and in 1898, during the Spanish-American War, she joined her parents in Camp Miami, which was an open-air hospital in the middle of the swamp. Hospital materials were in high demand, but low in supplies. Nellie would bark orders, and Daisy would run around doing anything she could to help, sometimes even just keeping water sterile. Nellie didn't let Daisy's work go unnoticed, and she wrote that Daisy worked like a little brick, which, weird comparison.
Yeah.
She's working like a brick. Holding her own? I guess that's what it makes sense, holding her own.
Yeah.
Daisy pursued art sporadically. My favorite thing she did was blacksmith her parents' initials into a gate. It is beautiful. It's my favorite thing. If you come to a museum, it's the best thing to look at. It is so cool. But think about it. Due to the strenuous nature of blacksmithing, Daisy got so muscular in the process that her tailor had to keep taking out her sleeves to make them bigger.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, she was getting muscular.
She was getting buff.
She was. While art kept her happy, she was realizing her marriage was not like her parents. So much was missing. A big question we can't help to ask is why did Mackie abandon Daisy? Some say maybe it was her deafness, and maybe it would have been... Hold on. Some say maybe it was her deafness, and maybe it would have given negative social status? No one can be for sure. The two lovers lived in different worlds, it seemed. It started off that way, though, if we think about it. Their marriage began with Daisy ill, practically bedridden, and he was overflowing with money and no responsibilities. Don't forget, though, she had some fun, too. Remember how I mentioned earlier that there was another reason why they probably never had kids? Enter Miss Anna Bateman, Mackie's other lady.
No.
Daisy probably had no idea who this lady was in 1899, nor how dangerous she would be in her marriage. But somewhere it became obvious that this wasn't just a friend of Mackie's. In 1900, Daisy was more open to the fact that she was unhappy. So she decided to do things that she enjoyed, like helping people at the Working Girls Club in Camberwell. It became apparent when Anna Bateman's true intentions were when she walked into the Wellsburn house in January 1901. Daisy wrote to her father explaining that she now saw Mackie's true intentions and that she wished to divorce him, writing that, this is sad, I feel as if my life was a nice clean garment which was being dragged through the mud. Aww. She returned soon to Savannah with her head held high. After being married for 19 years, divorce seemed like the best option for a situation like this. However, Daisy saw divorce as morally wrong and worried that it would cause issues for both their statuses. Plus, there were some factors that had to be played out. She would have to prove that he deserted her, committed adultery, or was cruel. None of this seemed right. Additionally, there would be a 2-year waiting period just for the desertion part. During that time, she would have to rely on him as they weren't divorced yet, just separated. So she would still need his financial help, and who knows how that would go with how irresponsible he was. She also would need to agree to it. Oh, wait, hold on. She also would need him to agree to it, that he was being wrong.
Oh, jeez.
Finally, in 1902, Daisy went to the Wellsburn house and was able to retrieve her things. It was after this that she realized that she was much happier than when she was with Mackie. In fact, she got to travel quite a bit when getting herself out of her slump. She traveled to faraway places like India and Egypt. But all good things come to an end, though. June 8, 1905, Mackie died of a seizure. Years of heavy drinking caught up with him, and the divorce would go through, but technically along the lines of a separation, as the 2-year period wasn't up. He passed away, 2 weeks before the separation was about to be over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Daisy's only regret regarding him was that he never changed her friend's opinions. That would be the only semi-nice thought Daisy probably had about him, because he didn't make it easier for her. Do you remember what happened next?
I think so, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Mackie Lowe was buried in Wimder Pool with Anna Bateman's love letters across his heart, which is disgusting. That is so disgusting.
Yeah.
She was in charge of the funeral, too, which is terrible.
Yeah, that's just so messed up. Come on now.
His will was very generous. Daisy would receive his house in Savannah, the Andrew Lowe home, the Wellsburn mansion, his London house, along with $25,000 a year. That's almost $1 million in today's money. That's really nice of him, right? Turns out, it wouldn't go that way. It would all go to Anna, to the other lady. Yep. Lizzie had a nice smile on her face, and then the dots connected, and she just went, yeah, he changed the will last minute.
Literally, my face was the shocked Pikachu expression.
It really was. Daisy's attorney would fix it, though, and she received a decent amount of money, the Wellsburn mansion, and the Andrew Lowe home.
As she should! Get that bag!
Yeah. Daisy would still get her allowance from her father, but at this point, she'd be able to live comfortably and happily. Anna still received a pretty decent amount, though. It was a difficult time for Daisy. Finding out your husband was unfaithful, his continuous issues with her hearing, Mackie passing away and then having to go and fight for a bit of the will that was originally belonging to her, it was hard. But without it, we wouldn't have the future Daisy found for herself.
Yeah.
But this is a rough life. She's 48 at this point.
Oh my gosh.
She didn't have any kids. We don't know why, health issues possibly. And her life shattered. She got everything she wanted, then it shattered right in front of her. Within the span of a couple years.
Oh my gosh.
Heartbreaking. While it caused her pain and sorrows, Mackie's death also freed her from what she wanted, freed her to do what she wanted to do and live a happy life no longer held back by a man. Period. Despite being in her mid-40s, she probably felt as good as free as she did in her teen years. She had people who could now offer marriage her away again. Wait, let me start that over. She had people who could now offer her marriage her way again, but she turned them down. I am too old and too deaf to try again. Especially as I am not in love, though. I think I love the man as dear. Wait. Okay, let me start that over. She said, I am too old and too deaf to try again. Especially as I am not in love, though I think I love the man as a dear friend. That is in reference to her close friend Archie Hunter's proposal. Things did remind her of the marriage, though. So that's her parents' 50th wedding anniversary, which also had been hers and Mackie's 21st wedding anniversary. They were married on the same day. She locked herself in the room that day, dealing with sickness in all the ways, in every way. The next day, however, she felt better and traveled to India, which, good for her.
Yeah.
Another good thing for her was that she kept looking for ways to improve her hearing wherever she traveled.
Again, as she should. Mm-hmm.
Daisy's personality was unmatched. She had become her own person and found new loves in the form of exotic and cool pets. She never turned away from any animal that needed help. And throughout her life, she had over 70 pets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nellie thought Daisy was a little too loving and helpful, which can be understood, but come on now, let the lady have some fun.
Yeah.
Daisy was killing time and trying to find herself, but it wouldn't be until she met a different man did she realize that she might have found her true calling. One day in 1911, Daisy was sitting at lunch next to a very famous man named General Sir Robert Baden-Powell. At first Daisy thought Baden-Powell was overrated and cocky. Everyone knew him, so what? He wasn't too special to her. Yet the two would have a conversation, and she would realize she was a bit harsh on her thoughts and on BP. I'm going to call him BP because that's just easier.
Nice.
He was quite interesting and cool, and someone she could be friends with, especially when she shared about the creation of the Boy Scouts. He's the founder of the Boy Scouts, if you didn't know. At 53, BP would take on the huge movement of the Boy Scouts, and the organization was growing rapidly by the time Daisy met him. Daisy loved the idea, as it showed the importance of being prepared for the military. However, that was just a small factor compared to the love for the emphasis of fun. The Boy Scouts didn't just teach young boys to be prepared and know how to handle life in a time full of war, but the organization also focused on having fun and enjoying childhood. BP once said, according to Cordery's book, children should be brought up as cheerfully and as happily as possible, and how in this life one ought to make as much pleasure as one possibly can. Because if one is happy, one has its own power to make all those around happy. Aww. Which is a really good quote. That's such a good quote. That is such a good saying. Like senior quote type level.
Yeah, really.
The two became very close, and over time, he would let her know about some issues affecting the organization. Girls wanting to join. Some people thought that the girls joining Boy Scouts would cause the boys to become too feminine, or girls become too masculine. It scared families, so boys would be taken out of scouting. BP thought that maybe a girl's version of Boy Scouts could solve this problem, something small and situational. That's where BP's sister Agnes Baden-Powell would come into play. She would oversee those girl troops called Girl Guides. In 1910, Agnes would get an executive board that would allow girls to be registered as Girl Guides. It didn't take long before troops started popping up, and an even shorter time for Daisy to fall in love with it.
Aww.
I still can't get over that quote. Like, that's such a good quote.
It really is.
Oomph.
So good.
Mm-hmm. She wanted to test the waters. So Daisy asked seven local... Wait, hold on. Let me reread my sentence. And even a shorter time for Daisy to fall in love with it. Okay, yes. She wanted to test the waters of the Girl Guides. So she asked seven local Scottish girls from Glen Leones to come to the Wellsburn house, to her mansion, for some Girl Guide meetings. One girl walked 6 miles for the meetings.
Wow. That is a lot.
That is walking around a couple squares of Savannah twice.
Yeah.
She taught them how to tie knots, read maps, the history of the flag, and the laws of guiding. Additionally, they learned how to knit, cook, and first aid basics. However, some of these girls did not have easy lives and worked in factories with little to pay. It's the Industrial Revolution, no child labor laws yet. It broke Daisy's heart, but she understood. Sometimes kids had to help make ends meet in their family. Daisy wanted to find a safer, maybe even fun way for the girls to make money. So she taught them how to raise chickens and sell the eggs. Personal hygiene. She even taught them how to take spin wool, which was something she didn't know her... Wait, hold on. She even taught them how to spin wool, which was something she didn't know herself, but she learned at the same time. The idea of Girl Guides made sense to Daisy, and it involved everything she loved doing. Her sister Mabel said that Daisy had never looked so well and happy, but Stacy Cordery puts it best. Scouting and guiding promised to equip young people with pride in their abilities, a broad way of skills, a social network beyond their immediate circle, and excellent role models, and increased sense of patriotism. Yes, whatever she said. I get it, but I also don't.
Fair enough.
Yeah. When the year of girl guiding in Glen Leones was over, Daisy couldn't get the whole concept out of her head. As soon as she returned to Savannah, she called up her cousin Nina Pape. She told Nina to come right over. I've got something for the girls of Savannah, all of America, and we're going to start it tonight. Those words caused Nina to come over where I can only imagine Daisy's pacing around a room, her mind just jumping with ideas. Daisy had a knack for advertising and publicity. She wrote letters, practically preached, and talked to anybody she met about the new organization. You know in school when they're trying to sell chocolate and they go to everybody from neighbor to teacher to family? Daisy was doing that.
Nice.
She would also get to these girls into the idea of guiding with tea parties. At these meetings, Daisy would talk about the dirty outdoors. The girls loved it because Daisy would be talking about things they enjoyed, like sleeping under the stars or catching frogs. The moms couldn't believe the words coming out of her mouth. This fancy lady in her beautiful house gets mud on her shoes? She sleeps outside? But Daisy would diminish their doubts by saying she enjoys all this and thinks there are outdoors things that can be used in their day-to-day life. The daughters would be smiling and all aboard, and once the moms saw their daughter's face, they were on board too. And by March 12, 1912, Daisy was deep into guiding. So it started over tea parties and mud. One girl, so there's a big crystal chandelier in the house. It was originally diamonds, I think. I don't know. But one girl went home and said, Mama, Miss Lowe has diamonds hanging from the ceiling. So imagine being that mom. Your daughter comes home, says there's diamonds in the ceiling. You're expecting fanciness, proper, like porcelain, quartz. You go to this house, you have a tea party, and this lady starts talking about mud, picking up frogs. You'd be so lost and confused. But then she says, oh, I can teach you how to make mud into clay. I'll teach you what the difference between a frog and a toad. And then your daughter's like smiling this big old smile, and you realize this is actually really fun.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Daisy. That's what I say on my tour. So you got a little bit of my tour, but that's what happened. And it's such a funny thing, and it's so absurd, but it's so cool. And it makes total sense. The first Girl Guide register is exactly what you think. A list of Savannah troops that had the girls' names, captains, counselors, and officers. There's no date until October 1912, according to Cordery, though, but before October, you see a patrol from Savannah's female orphan asylum. Their troop involved 17 girls, and they may be the first patrol. If that's so, that's awesome. They need recognition. Sally, though, is the elite girls' society that get to claim the status of being the first Girl Guides in America. Daughters of the elite and high-status families beat out orphans, but the idea that those girls were included, I think, says a lot about Daisy's dedication and wanting to have everyone involved included. To be honest, it doesn't matter who was first or when it began, which is another thing that was debated. The fact that it blew up needs to be acknowledged. Here's a fun thing to imagine. 15-7, you can imagine it too, Daisy. Not Daisy, just Lizzie. Hmm? I said, here's a fun thing to imagine, and I called you Daisy by accident. Ends with Lizzie. Imagine, okay, 50-something-year-old Daisy breaking Girl Guide's ankles and shooting 3 points at basketball.
Hey,
I just imagine, like, you know, like, when they're, like, between their ankles and stuff?
Yeah.
That was her. Back then, girls didn't play basketball often, if at all. Daisy didn't like that, so she strung up some curtains to make baskets and let the girls have at it. That was just one of the ways society saw Girl Guides in action, but some people saw them in uniforms, and that's all it took for them to want to be involved. Their original uniforms resembled the British Girl Guide uniforms, but later they would change to their own colors. Uniforms not only showed unity, but they also looked really cool to young girls who wanted something like that. Another thing that drew girls in the fact that uniforms were typically only a male thing. But now there's girls walking around in uniforms? That's crazy. That's also really cool. I like how Stacey Cordery says it. Since usually only males wear uniforms, Girl Guides must have access to this arcane masculine knowledge hereunto forbidden to girls. That sentence is just really funny to me. That's just like really funny to me. Like, ooh, look at these people in their uniforms. They know arcane knowledge.
Yeah.
No, they're just playing basketball. But sure, arcane knowledge. The adults thought it was different, but also patriotic, as they were very militaristic in style. But overall, it was this form of advertisement. As May passed, there were several troops established and out having fun and learning. Willie drove past the headquarters one day and said it was packed with Girl Guides like a swarm of bees. I don't know what they were doing, but apparently they were enjoying themselves. You are certainly giving a great deal of pleasure to a large number of individuals, who would be very unlikely to get it otherwise, and no doubt they were improved in many ways. You can't help it but love Willie. Like, dang. Overall, a great dude. 10 out of 10, Dad. Nellie, you kind of get confused on how she to feel about her. And, yeah. But Willie, great dad. And even though she was on board, Nellie, talking about, even though she was on board for the counselors, she thought Daisy wouldn't hold on to this idea much longer and leave it half finished like she did with everything else.
Oh, man.
So Nellie wasn't the best supporter. But she was there, just sometimes not. Now, it is important to know that the first organization was called Girl Guides, but it wouldn't be until a year later, after she brought girl guiding over to the United States, that some girls came forward and said they preferred to be called Girl Scouts. She understood where they were coming from and had no big issues with it. She let the troops decide whether or not they wanted to be called Guides or Scouts. As we can tell, they chose Scouts. Now, today, it is mostly just the U.S. and, like, Japan that uses Scouts, but the rest of the world is Guides, and they come all over to the world to come to Savannah to visit the birthplace, which is crazy in my sense. I've had women from China who were Girl Guides, and I'm like, it's so crazy that we're connected in just this small little person.
Yeah. It's so cool, though.
Yeah, like, in theory, if every country sold their own cookies, how cool would it be if there was a cookie for each country that was, like, certain to that country?
Yeah.
That would be so cool. This is something I don't know. I didn't know, but did you know that the Girl Scouts had a big hand in World War I? They helped the Red Cross, Food Administration, the War Garden Commission, and the Liberty Loan. They also were some spies. Yeah, like 90 girls in Europe, in England, were spies. Oh my I'm not going to get too into it, but they basically like cleaned up after the ladies. And if someone heard something, they'd rush down the hallway and say, so-and-so heard something. And they would like be like the relay between, which is awesome. Oh my gosh,
that's so crazy, but so cool though.
Yeah. In Washington, D.C., Girl Scouts helped by cooking and distributing soup. Their help would free up adults who would come help in other areas young girls couldn't. Girls would provide directions, knit socks, scarves for soldiers, make surgical dressings, and do messenger work for the government. At this time, membership climbed from 9,000 girls in October 1917 to a little over 41,000 in March 1919. By 1920, there was 82,000 registered Girl Scouts. That's patriotism.
Yeah, really. That's so crazy.
And I was just talking about cookies, so you're probably wondering where cookies came around. Believe it or not, President Herbert Hoover encouraged the idea. The mistletoe troop from Oklahoma sold cookies at Muskogee High School in 1917. Then 5 years later, a Chicago leader would write about their successful cookie sales. In 1923, Manhattan Girl Scouts would give First Lady Grace Coolidge some cookies as a publicity for their fundraiser. So it wasn't a big idea at first, just something that started catching on. Some of the funds back then would go to raising money for them to buy materials to make their uniforms or patches, nice. Which is the cutest little thing. Now, I haven't mentioned Daisy in a while because at this point, she was handling a lot of the serious business organization matters, finding good counsel, making sure nothing is being copied, and a whole bunch of stuff that goes over my head. During this time, she would also be getting sick back and forth. Yet, it wouldn't be until December 7th, 1926 that news would drop. Daisy would call the headquarters. I've been very ill. You see, Juliet was suffering from breast cancer, but she kept it a secret from most people in her life. As I'm typing this out, and I can't imagine when I read it, I will start tearing up, and I am a little bit. On Monday, January 17th, 1927, at 66 years old, Juliet Gordon Lowe, Daisy as we've come to know her, would pass away inside the Andrew Lowe home. She'd be 164 years old today.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. But there's one more thing I want to say. That's all I got on Daisy. But can we just sit back and think how amazing and ahead of her time she was? I thought that we were out. I'm like, oh my god, we're out.
Lizzie's been doing stuff. I'm just doing things.
No, it's fine. Can we just think about how amazing this and ahead of her time this woman was? I guess if we clarify things, Agnes Bainton Powell came up with the idea of Girl Guides, Scout Troops, but Daisy picked the idea and was allowed to and ran with it, to the point it became her own thing. This is a long episode. We're about 40 minutes in.
Oh, wow.
But I just know, I never was a Girl Scout. I wanted to be, but know this, I never was a Girl Scout, but I wanted to be. But my troop had the idea that you had to wear skirts, and I was very much a tomboy. Growing up, when I saw Girl Scouts in the media, they seemed to be girly girls, proper, sometimes pretty, prissy, and stuck up. But look at the founder. She was none of those things. Okay, maybe proper, but that's beside the point. She broke molds. Nellie tried to put Daisy in a certain mold, but Daisy broke that. She didn't want any man who would have her. She wanted her man. She flirted with girls. She cussed. She was improper. She made mistakes. She forgot to do laundry, and she laughed. She cried. She built a gate. She shot a tiger. She danced with royals. She climbed the Great Pyramid of Giza. And yet, she didn't find her purpose until her 50s. There's so much for young girls to look at and think, yeah, I do that. Or yeah, she's awesome. Or even older girls like myself. I don't know what I'm doing with my life, and I feel like I'm running out of time. But I see women like Daisy, and suddenly I feel like okay not knowing. This may be one of the longest episodes we have, but I don't care. Juliet Gordon Lowe is a role model for anyone and everyone. People just need to know her story. If you can look at a box of Girl Scouts now and think, huh, the founder was hard of hearing, or, these inmates are good. Thank you to that one troop in Oklahoma for kickstarting the idea. That's fine. Her story should be remembered any way it can. That is Juliet Gordon Lowe, and I am so passionate about her, I'm getting a tattoo. Inspired by her. I'm gonna show it to you.
Yes, me too.
So her favorite bird was the mockingbird, and her favorite color may have been pink.
Oh, I love that. That's so cute. I'm gonna post it too.
She also had a beautiful set of pearl necklace she sold to support the Girl Scouts.
Oh, wow.
Daisy was her nickname. She has a spear from Africa. You can see it at the museum. She did blacksmithing, and she did painting, and you'll see like a mockingbird was sending all this stuff. And one of the things I didn't mention is she has a founder's portrait. Now, think of the founder's portrait, like the presidential portraits. They look amazing. In hers, her tie is loose and her shirt's undone. She did that on purpose. She told the painter to paint her like that. That way, these girls know they don't have to be perfect. Who does that? who in their, like, not in the right mind, but who, like, thinks outside the box and says, show myself not perfect. Show me, like, I've had a bad day so that these girls know it's okay to have a bad day. That is the sweetest thing ever. I love this woman. I literally cried when I was writing this in the airport. I was going to New York, and I cried because I'll never get to meet this woman. And if I do, it's going to be a long time, but I'm going to sit down and ask her so many questions. Also, were you gay? Miss Daisy, were you a little gay? Please. No straight woman does a blacksmith the whole gate. They can, but it's really gay. But she's so cool. Like, listen to this episode. You're already listening to it, but share it to people. She's an amazing woman. Hopefully you've understood my words, because I do talk fast, and I fumble over my words, but God, I love her so much. Did you learn anything you didn't know, Lizzie?
There was a lot I didn't know that I was listening to.
What was your favorite?
I think it's the fact that she took up, like, not mining. Jesus Christ.
Blacksmithing?
Blacksmithing, thank you. Like, I think that's so cool.
I'll have to send you a photo of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. It has her parents' initials in it. William Washington Gordon. Cute. Stylized daisies and her mom's initials. Eleanor Lyle Kinsey. And that used to be outside the mansion in Scotland. And then we have it. Huh. Sadly, today, the Scottish mansion is an office building.
Aww.
They don't know their history, but we do. But yeah, this is a very long episode. I hope you enjoy it because I love this woman. She's so cool. If you ever get a chance, visit the Juliet Gordon Low birthplace. Check out the Stacey Cordery book. The remarkable founder of the Girl Scouts. You put it down, you feel like you became her best friend. Ash is Daisy's best friend because I know Daisy would love Ash and Finnegan. She would have a fit over Finnegan.
Yeah.
You would have a, Miss Daisy would have a fit over you. It's like, I have a fit over her. But thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Like and follow us wherever you can. I'll post photos of Juliet on the Facebook and Instagram. And just leave us a good review. Tell us, were you a Girl Scout? What did Juliet mean to you? Do you remember learning about her? Did you ever visit the birthplace? Have you visited the birthplace? What was your favorite thing? What's your favorite cookie? Yeah, just interact with us. It helps show that we have followers and stuff, and it shows that we have people who are listening this long. I really appreciate it. And you want to say anything, Lizzie?
Yeah, I think support your
local troops. Girl Scout troop. Yeah.
Help the girls out.
Yeah.
I was not a Girl Scout, but I do respect the Girl Scouts, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. A lot more than the Boy Scouts sometimes.
Yeah.
We're not going to get into that. That's a whole situation. We're not political. But, yeah, thank you so much for listening. Follow us where you can, Facebook and Instagram at No More Podcast. I am Bailey.
I'm Lizzie.
Don't forget to tip your tour guides, because if you don't...
Well... No Girl Scout cookies for you.
No Girl Scout cookies for you. Or Daisy might slide down Daisy might break your ankles at basketball.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye. Bye.